Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group, Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, October 6th. Hello, everyone. Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong, here for our weekly get-together, our weekly look at markets from Wall Street to the wheat fields and corn and soybean fields over the rest of the nation. Always an interesting time, and this week we spent time at the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. But before we go to the numbers, I think I should probably, well, let me take the weekly numbers. For the week, the S&P went up 1.2%, the Dow added 1.6%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.5%. And before we look at the closing day of trade for the week, the big report this morning with a couple of surprises from the Labor Department, because employment fell in September for the first time in 7 years as Hurricanes Harvey and Irma left displaced workers temporarily unemployed and delayed hiring, the latest indication that the storms have undercut economic activity in the third quarter. Now, analysts surveyed by Reuters were looking at the number to come in, creating about 90,000 new jobs. But the Labor Department report this morning said non-farm payrolls went down by 33,000 jobs last month amid a record drop in employment in the leisure and hospitality sector. The decline in payrolls, the first since September of 2010. And the department said Harvey and Irma, which wreaked havoc in Texas and Florida in late August and early September, reduced employment last month. But then underlying details of the closely watched employment report were upbeat. The employment rate hit a more than 16.5-year low of 4.2%, and annual wage growth accelerated to 2.9%. One analyst said investors will find solace in a whole host of other labor market indicators that do reveal an underlying labor market that continues to show evidence of resilience and continued tightening. Now, the hurricanes, of course, played a major role, but many of the dislocated people will probably return to work. Leisure and hospitality payrolls took a big drop, down 111,000. And that's the most for a month since records started in 1939, as employment at restaurants and bars fell 104,700 last month. There were also declines in retail and manufacturing employment last month. The economy did create 13,000 more jobs than previously reported in August. Harvey and Irma did not have an impact on the unemployment rate, which fell 0.2 percentage point from August to the lowest level since February of 2001. The smaller survey of households from which the jobless rate is derived treats persons as employed regardless of whether they missed work during the reference week and were unpaid as a result. The decrease in the unemployment rate reflected a 906,000 surge in household employment. The dollar initially rose against a basket of currencies as investors focused on the jobless rate and wages. Underscoring the disruptive impact of the hurricanes, the household survey showed 1.5 million workers stayed at home in September because of the bad weather. And that's the most since January of 1996. So that did have an impact on the market today, no doubt of that. But now let's take a look at the closing day activity on Wall Street. The S&P 500 eased off a little bit today. That ended a six-day run of record highs as the first monthly decline in U.S. non-farm jobs in 7 years had an impact on the marketplace. Now, Walgreens Boots Alliance and CVS Health fell and were among the biggest drags on the S&P 500 after a CNBC report that Amazon was close to a decision on selling prescription drugs. Walgreens shares dropped 5%, CVS down 5%, while Amazon shares went up 0.9% in the activity today in the health sector of the economy. S&P Energy Index declined 0.8% as oil prices fell amid a bout of profit-taking and the return of oversupply worries. And then shares of Costco dropped 6% after the warehouse club retailer reported a decline in gross margins, and that stock was the biggest drag on the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. The oil market was in the news today as well. Oil futures fell more than 2% today, ending Brent crude's longest multi-week rally in 16 months, as oversupply concerns once again reappeared and producers have started hedging on future drilling. So Brent futures settled down 2.4%, $1.38 a barrel to $55.62, and that snapped a five-week winning streak that was the longest since June of 2016. The U.S. West Texas crude dropped $1.50 to $49.29, a 3% decline. That put losses on the week at 4.6%. So the oil market could be running into some problems again, although Russia and Saudi Arabia held a meeting this week and said they were going to try their best to keep production from going up. Here's a deadening bit of news. U.S. traffic deaths jumped 5.6% in 2016 to the highest level in a decade. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, traffic deaths went up to the highest number in a decade at 37,461. The Auto Safety Agency said the number of pedestrians killed jumped 9% to the highest number since 1990, while the overall rate of traffic deaths jumped 2.6%. That's not good news. So as we look ahead to next week, retail and inflation data could shed more light on the impact of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma on the economy after the storms cut employment in September. The Labor Department expected to report on Thursday that its producer price index for final demand went up 0.4% in September after rising 0.2% in October. More data from the Labor Department on Friday of next week will probably show the Consumer Price Index accelerated 0.6% in September after rising 0.2% in August. And on Friday, the Commerce Department is expected to report that retail sales went up 1.2% in September, excluding automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services. Retail sales probably rose 0.3%. We will get some reports on the health of the banking industry next week. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, the biggest U.S. bank by assets, will report third-quarter results on Thursday. Citigroup, the fourth biggest, will also report on Thursday. The big U.S. banks have already flagged poor trading revenue for the quarter, and investors will look out for any commentary about trading conditions and loan growth going into the fourth quarter. Weak trading results are expected to pressure Citi's earnings. Bank of America reports third quarter results on Friday. The bank has been winning favor among investors as it is executed on its cost-saving strategy and showed increasing momentum in its retail banking franchise. Also next week, BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. How big are they? $5.7 trillion. We'll report third quarter earnings on Wednesday. Wall Street will be anxious to know how well the bellwether company is faring as investors move to lowest cost funds. So those are some of the things that we'll be watching next week on Wall Street. And of course, we're always watching the Korean situation and God forbid any other national tragedies such as we experienced last week. We're going to talk agriculture as Max Armstrong sits down with Jerry Goodell of the Price Futures Group when we continue on the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
In the studio with us this weekend, Jerry Goodell from Price Futures Group. How's everything at Price? How's the gang over there these days?
Oh, it's doing fine. And we're all waiting around here to see what the heck the USDA wants to say next week in the crop report. But right now, we sure could use this rain they're talking about here.
Well, now, in recent crop reports, they've gone up. They've gone up. Will they go up in the October report?
Well, that's the old tradition, of course. Big crops get bigger. I guess I have I think there's a lot of optimism about what we've seen in the first flush of early beans and corn, but that really wasn't the crop that really got impacted as much by the weather. We'll have to see, but right now I'm slightly up on beans and a little down on corn, but really not much change at this time around. USDA was optimistic about GMO and its impact. I guess we'll see if it comes through.
Couple of private estimates coming in. Well, several of them we'll be getting here ahead of the official USDA report. But I noticed a couple of high-profile ones inching up a little bit closer to that 170 a bushel mark on corn. Not quite there, but pretty doggone close to it.
Right. Well, it's an interesting scenario here with the Eastern Corn Belt, the area that really has had the opportunity to get some yields in and some reports in. Anything west of I-35 here, though, has really been shut down in the last week or 10 days. And you know, Nebraska hardly turned their wheel, South Dakota and Kansas, a little bit in North Dakota. So it'll be interesting as to what we finally get some action there. But right now, this rain activity is going to keep us down to a pretty modest increase in the harvesting numbers next Monday.
You don't expect a significant jump then in corn and soybean harvest progress.
Now, we're about up 10% behind on this week's number. I think we could edge up to maybe 15% behind. I'm not sure we're going to end up getting the 10% jump in corn plant harvesting this week.
I heard a comment from a farmer friend this week in central Illinois. He said, we're just kind of waiting on corn. He said, it's kind of nice to see it drying down to the field, and the price isn't very encouraging. So he said, we've hustled over to the soybeans, and there's been some concern about how quickly the beans dried down, how much the moisture level dropped there, resulting in some shattering of the pods right out there at the head.
Exactly. Some of the that's definitely been a feature all the way along here across the whole Midwest. Nobody's excited about harvesting corn and really above 20% because it's a lot more expensive. And well, the prices are at right now, there's no reason to jump out there unless you really have a need to get some reason because of droppage or something like that. And beans, I've heard some numbers down close to that 9 and 10%, which you're starting to lose some yields when you start harvesting that low of moisture. And you have the issue, like you say, of shattering and some field loss picks up because of the dryness.
Test weight falling off rather substantially. Is it hard for you as a market analyst to get excited about this harvest because it just looks all the way around to be such a big one?
Well, I think the general numbers are going to be more than substantial. I guess the one thing we got to remember, too, here is the fact that because of the reduced corn plantings and that, unless we do have some kind of super jump back up to the 175 yields of last year, we're going to have a billion bushels less than a year ago. Now, we've had an increase in the carryover stock, but we're still going to be half a billion bushels behind on our total supply of corn here in the U.S. I think there's been a little excitement, too, about, oh, we're going to place to put it all, but I think there's going to be space out there to put things away. The beans, the areas of beans increasing, we had 6 million more acres or 7 or whatever you want to call and that, and if you put 50 bushels in, that's 350 million. That's not a, it's not a huge jump like you can get in corn with another 3 or 4 million acres of them.
The pieces of the puzzle on acreage, actual acreage put in, those are coming together now, aren't they?
Yes, we'll get the next big adjustment on that on the October updates from FSA and how that puts together with the USDA's numbers. There seems to be a general expectation of a slight increase in beans, somewhere between 3 and maybe 500,000 acres, because of maybe a combination of some of these double crops, or excuse me, replants that we had in the east and some other issues along the way on the price, along, and maybe a modest decline in corn at this point. The big thing is as we go forward here, people anticipating some bring back on that 6 or 7 million of more beans this year to more corn next year, but I'm not sure we're going to get a swing of 7 million. I'm talking 2 or 3 million right now.
What are you talking about?
About the 2018 plantings, because of the big crop this year, the rotation brings you back towards more corn next year.
But shift back.
Yeah, shift back. I don't think we're going to get 6 million going back to corn next year.
In the southern hemisphere, it's planting time. They were wringing their hands for a little bit about it being dry. Did they get the moisture?
They did get an excellent set of moisture here over this last weekend. It moved up from the south and been in Argentina and getting them too wet, and then finally moved into Rio Grande and Paraná, even actually into Mato Grosso do Sul and Goiás, which are the areas right around it, Mato Grosso, which is a big province down there in the northwest part of Brazil. And that I'd have to say that they could use more moisture in the most important state down there. There's some areas that got some rains. I'd have to say, though, a lot of rains didn't get a full inch in a widespread area. So that's going to be quite important, because this is really a month behind when some of these guys want to have the rain and want to have it started. Some have already put the beans in the ground and waited for this rain, which traditionally, once it starts, it really gets going in a big way because of the monsoonal kind of mindset that happens there. But I wonder, there's really, the talk right now is over a week away, maybe even more, like 10 days away for the next real good rain for Mato Grosso. That could be kind of the worst of all things. The sprout doesn't do you a lot of good if you can't keep it going.
Well, we'll continue to watch it. Obviously, it's a long season yet ahead down there, and many things can happen. That's our hope. I mean, that's what we're clinging to here, isn't it?
I think that's a big part of why this market maybe has not been as, partly because we haven't got the crop size in, partly we don't have the pressure of harvest. But I think at the same time, there is people looking around the world to say that things could change dramatically from the super good crops of last year in Brazil to maybe less than optimal the coming year.
But now, how long has it been since they've really had significant crop problems down there?
Well, not so much in the beans, but 2 years ago's corn. That was a huge change. They had you compare this year's, this crop that just came in against the year before, they had a 50% increase. They went from a 65, 67 crop to a 95 crop. If we go back to an 80 crop, that could be interesting.
The demand doesn't appear to be fading at all.
Not on the corn side. Chinese soybeans are fabulous. And I think, and in general, the whole Southeast Asia, the whole world is looking at the feeding situation of going to Western style and the protein approach. It's definitely, I think, staying on the rise, and I don't see any real blip going on. I'm not sure we're going to have a 10 million metric ton jump, but I think that's the key feature in this thing, is Brazil does need to have a crop of respectable size. And then, and the interesting thing in the U.S. here, as we all know, people didn't plant oats. They didn't plant barley. They didn't feed the wheat. That's the reason why I had a very good feed number here on the stocks report of 10 days ago. And that feature is going to be quite important as we kind of go forward here. Even I just saw this week that the Saudi Arabians have decided to cut back on their barley purchases because of the fact there's not the supply out there for their normal feeding. And looking to all things corn and soybeans, which is like, I'm not sure how that works over there, but I guess that's what they're looking at.
Historically, back to South America for a moment. Historically, we never get very excited about any problems in the fields in Brazil or Argentina until along about December or January, correct?
That's a usual situation, I think. But I think there's a lot more awareness of that crop and its potential and how important it's become to the crop. I'd have to say that if things aren't picking up a little bit better on their planting progress and things like that, it's going to be well known. I think the biggest twist in this whole thing as we go forward is what does it impact on the double crop corn up there. That really was a factor that impacted 2 years ago, was the fact that we had a similar delayed planting situation that turned into a stressful planting and harvesting situation for their second crop corn in Mato Grosso.
So pay attention to the Southern Hemisphere.
Yes, it's coming up. Like you say, it's not going to have the highest recognition, but it's still going to end up being an important factor. But I think the real big feature going forward here in the U.S. is that we've had a kind of a modest improvement in feed demand this year. I think we're going to have continued feed demand. Unfortunately, that's not a sexy thing. It's not, you only see it in the quarterly reports. But with the livestock we've got on the ground, the cattle numbers coming back to the feed yards, the lack of alternative feed grains, lack of enthusiasm for selling wheat when it, you know, supplies are tight in the U.S., I think you put those all together, we could maybe find another mighty billion bushels of feed demand in the U.S., which could be a very interesting total as we look down the road. That's not something on our radar today, though. It's something to keep in mind for next December through January and see how we're doing then.
The pigs, the cattle, the chickens have to be fed, and their numbers are growing.
Exactly, and they don't have much alternatives but good old yellow corn.
Thank you, Jerry. Good to see you. Jerry Goodell from Price Futures Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The agricultural spotlight was on Madison, Wisconsin this week with the 51st edition of the World Dairy Expo, attracting thousands of visitors from about 70 counties and a large number of exhibitors of technology and equipment for the dairy industry. And then, of course, the star of the show, the dairy cow. 2,342 of the planet's finest dairy animals coming together in Madison, Wisconsin. I spent Wednesday there, and I'm always fascinated by conversations taking place in the exhibit area and in the dairy barns, and I like to eavesdrop on them. And one of the conversations had to do with robotic milkers, because it was 17 years ago that a robotic milker made its first appearance at World Dairy Expo. For those of you who don't know how a robotic milker works, it's stationary in a barn area. Cows learn to walk to it because there's feed in front of it that would attract them. They place themselves over the milking equipment. The milking machine attaches itself to the udder. The cow is milked, and when that is complete, the machine drops off, and the cow walks away, milked and well-fed. Well, I can remember 17 years ago standing with other dairy farmers looking at it, and all of us said, that's never going to work. Dairy farmers can't afford that technology. Cows will not milk themselves. That just won't work. Well, I was wrong, and so was everybody else. I think there are five or six companies now that were at World Dairy Expo exhibiting the robotic milker. And the big reason it has worked is the difficulty in getting labor, in getting young people to get up early in the morning, go to the barn, milk cows, as I did as a child, and that has become a major problem for dairy farmers. And so labor. and the labor cost eventually gets covered by the investment in the robotic milker. And after overhearing that conversation, I talked to several owners of robotic milkers, and they point out when it comes to the milker, they're never late, they're always there, and they don't take the day off. I asked about the technology and keeping it in going without breakdowns. They said seldom happens, but when it does, the dealer is there quickly to take care of the problem. So it was an interesting time at World Dairy Expo, but I grew up on a dairy farm, and so I'm fascinated by what has happened since the days I sat on a three-legged stool and milked cows in a dairy barn. Result today, Brazil soybean planting reached 5.6% of the total forecast area. That's well below the 10.4% seen at this time last year, as dry weather conditions for most of September delayed field work. Seeding was in line with a five-year average of 5.3% for this time of the year in Brazil. But again, as we in this country and in North America had with weather, they're having some of the same weather, and moisture is needed. The other story that I do want to cover with you this week just a little bit is a new rule, law, whatever you want to call it, that apparently is going to become reality sooner than later. And that's an event that is helping, that is coming out of San Francisco. U.S. consumers are about to gain a rare window into the use of antibiotics in the food system, an issue of skyrocketing concern among public health groups, shoppers, and doctors. Now, critics have argued the agricultural industry abuses these medicines, administering antibiotics to animals that do not need them, and contributing to the rise of superbugs. Consumer groups have complained the public knows too little about how their food is raised, and that's an issue compounded by a range of confusing labels. But now, thanks to a new San Francisco city ordinance due to be signed into law this month, a number of the country's top meat and poultry brands will soon have to share far more details about their antibiotic use. Under the rule, which passed the city's Board of Supervisors unanimously this past week, grocery stores will be required to document antibiotic use in the meat and poultry brands they sell and make the information available via a city website to consumers. With all the concern we've had over the use of drugs and that, come on, why? Now we're coming onto this. So anyway, if you're in the livestock industry and if you're in the food marketing industry, you're going to be faced with some challenges as you label your products and as you sell them on the meat counter. Well, let's turn to livestock for a moment and see where we're going to start trading next Monday at the Mercantile Exchange. The October lean hog contract will start trading at $59.17 a hundredweight after dropping $1.77 today. Live cattle, October contract, $111 a hundredweight after gaining 82 cents today. And the October feeder cattle will start at $153.95 after gaining 42 cents today. Grain, where will we start trading on Monday? Well, December wheat will start at $4.43 and a half. December corn will start at $3.50. November soybeans will start at $9.72 and a quarter. That's our time. Thanks for joining us. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.